What we got here is, I mean, you really need to put your ear up on this right here. Understand. I mean, it's really good, dog. You do what you do. We do what we do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to In the Database with Nana. Today, I'm joined by one of my good friends, KB. You want to introduce yourself? What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. For those that don't know me, my name is KB Noseball, ironically. I like to watch hoops and just share my thoughts with them, you know what I'm saying? So I'm glad you brought me onto your platform.
No problem. Okay, for those that don't know you, who's your team and who do you support?
I support the Golden State Warriors. They're definitely my favorite team in the NBA. I've been supporting them for like, I want to say 11 years now. So yeah, that's my team and I ride or die for them. So yeah.
Oh, wow. When did you first get interested, like basketball wise, like on a deeper level as more than a fan, just sort of analyzing the game and stuff like that?
It was kind of in high school. Like I was a casual, like I like playing basketball, obviously. But I always listen to like ESPN guys, like the Stephen A. Smiths, the Max Kellermans, the Skip Baylesses of the world. But their takes were always just a bit off to me. Like I just felt like there was more missing to what they were actually saying. And every time I watched the game and I heard what they said, I always felt like there's a big chunk of the conversation that's always missing. So I just decided to start like deep diving into a more, looking at more of the analytical side and seeing what's missing. And I just found it was more so about the consistency of their takes. And sometimes they have this thing where they are hyperbolic in terms of what happens during the game right after. And they forget the actual breakdown part, and it's more so about the narrative. So I was kind of getting tired of that. So that's when, I'll say around when I was like 16, 17 years old, I really started taking a lot more serious in terms of being objective and just finding the analytical parts of it all.
Did you, is the way you view the game of basketball different now? Like when you watch a game versus when you quote unquote call yourself a casual, just watch different fun?
Yeah, you see a lot more in of like a, I guess like a breakdown kind of lens. Like if I see a play, if I see a spin pick and roll, before I would just see someone, like my casual mind would be like, oh, Jamal Murray got cooked in the spin, like in the pick and roll. But then I see what actually happens. Like, oh, there's no help side here. There could have been a backdoor on the weak side, things like that. Like the second side action could have been running. Like you see a lot more things when you look at it from like, I guess not like an analytical point of view, or I guess more serious, depending on how you look at it. But I definitely, like, there's a different lens to when you take it more serious or when you watch it from that kind of eye.
Yeah, for sure. And which will, like, take me to my next segment of the playoffs this year. What did you think about it? Did you think it was a little bit underwhelming, overwhelming? Are you believe in this, like, hype of Miami? Like, and we'll get into the Miami-Denver series. But in general, the playoffs as a whole, how did you feel about it this year?
I had some positive thoughts about the playoffs, honestly. I think in terms of the excitement of each round was really good. Like the Bucks being knocked out in the first round by 5 games. What Jimmy did in that series was insane. Obviously, Steph and the Warriors beating the Kings, which is something that was supposed to happen. But the fashion that it happened was actually really, really nice. Steph going out with the 50 ball, obviously. Then the Warriors and Lakers in the second round. Toxicity behind it, the toxicity behind it and the storyline as well with the LeBron versus Steph. That was really, really fun. The Nuggets were just by far the most consistent team through and through each round. They were really impressive to watch and they were building their case as to why they were a serious team out West. The Suns with Devin Booker on the rise and his playoff performances, the downfall of KD. There was a lot of storylines. I think these playoffs are really, really interesting and fun to watch. And now it brought us to the NBA Finals, right? So I really enjoyed the experience. Unfortunately, my team lost. But other than that, I had a really like fun time or continuing to have a fun time watching these finals.
Yeah. To me, this year, to me, the playoffs was really underwhelming. And a lot of that, I'll say, I didn't even pay attention to the East. The East was just another day wasting our time. To me, when the games were on in the East, obviously impressive things did happen. Like you said, with Jimmy Butler's performance in that Bucks series, but it ended rather quickly, like in 5 games. But besides that series, like it was just like, I was okay with box score watching. You know what I'm saying? You know, you get what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
the West was actually entertaining for a good as much as it could be, but even then it was underwhelming because of some injuries. I really wanted to see a fully healthy Clipper team to face that Suns team. We could have had a very interesting playoffs series there, but we didn't get that. The Kings Warriors series was actually very incredible. I like that. Everything about that series was really nice, even though like I wish we won it sooner because I think it took a toll on us going to 7 in the first round, especially mm-hmm. as the other team. However, it was a very like amazing first round. And then in the second round with the Lakers, honestly, I think the series was more entertaining non-basketball related wise than actual basketball related wise. And that's what you get with a toxic 2 fan bases put together. In reality, toxic 3 fan bases, because you got the Steph, actually 4. You got the Warrior fan base, you got the Laker fan base, then you got the Steph fan base and the LeBron fan base. With Steph and LeBron, they carry 2 different fan bases with them. The ones that like them because they're part of the Warriors, and the ones that like them because just they're Steph. You know what I mean? So it was basically 4 fan bases going at each other's neck in that series. And then obviously the Nuggets in the Lakers series, to be honest to me, I don't like the Lakers, but I will say this, that was, even though it was a sweep, it was a very entertaining series. And I'll give them that. They went out really sad because they just couldn't close at all in any of these 4 games. Every one of these games was winnable. And a lot of the time, I think 3 out of the 4 games, it's just the superstars of the team showed up. They win. They're getting crazy productions from guys like Austin Reeves giving you like 20 in almost every game. You get that, you have to win at least one of those games, you know? And Rue played well. I mean, I just don't know why the Lakers 2 stars just chose to be underwhelming in that series outside of game 4 for Bron. But the other 3 games, you know, you can make argument like if the stars really did show up, they could have had a case. I wouldn't say they win that series, but it wouldn't have ended in 4. And then obviously now we're in the finals. You made a comment about the finals, you know, when we talked about off the record, that you said it didn't have an aura. And to me, I agreed with you, but it seems like me and you had a 2 different understanding of that one. With my the way I look at it, to me, basketball is as much as about what's on the court as off the court. In this finals, as soon as the game ends, it's just whatever, it ended. There's nothing to say about that. There's no spaces about these games. There's no like a million talking topics about these games. There's no like agendas and narratives being run around these games. Like all these things really did make NBA culture. Just like if I was comparing it to last year's finals, like as soon as like Warriors lost or Celtics lost, it was like chaos everywhere you see, whether on the timeline, on the media, and it brought like an entertainment value to that game. And a lot of that has to do because Steph was in the finals. Anytime Steph or LeBron James are in the finals, even dating back to like Kobe is in the NBA finals, these players have something to them that carry bigger than basketball. It connects communities and stuff. And we don't really have that in the finals this year. We really don't. We don't have that it factor, that star factor. In fact, the 2 it factors I believe the NBA is looking forward to me is like Luka, Ja, Zion, and they're all on their own BS. And that's another story for another day for the NBA future. But now if you look at this finals, I feel like it doesn't have an aura because there isn't a player who's culturally dominant on the court or off the court in this final series. So can you elaborate what you meant by that?
The aura part, honestly, I tweeted out as like, it has some truth behind it in terms of like the actual aura, because as much as people hate to talk about aura in basketball, even me, I don't really like talking about it at all. So it's just a bit weird. Like the storyline, the narrative, who's in the finals, like that type of thing always matters. And when it comes to the Nuggets, them making it to the finals, like the only team I seen beating them originally was my own team. But even then, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't like as fully sold on the fact that if we could beat them or not. But they were a great team, and I knew they were destined to make a deep playoff run, let alone make the finals. So they had their own storyline in terms of Jokic, what he did as a player during the regular season, how you could argue he got snubbed for these MVPs and how he's rising in the playoffs. Jamal Murray came back from an ACL injury, was a viable duo partner. Comes to the playoffs, rises, has an elite series against the Lakers, and is continuing to have one against Miami right now. But like you said, like that it factor, the narrative, the storyline part isn't really there. And that's not necessarily to me a bad thing. Maybe it's because people are actually just starting to watch the games more for it being basketball related rather than the off-court kind of things, which isn't a terrible thing in my eyes. I think that the opposing team, this is where we disagreed. I think the opposing team was one with not that much aura. Now, Miami's a complete underdog, right? And when they beat the Bucks, but they were favored to beat the Heat. And then when they beat the Celtics, these were all like big storyline things, like Jimmy Butler's 56-point game, him closing it out in Milwaukee, him taking the first two games in Boston, and then the 3-0 lead almost being torn apart. Then they ended up making it to the finals. So technically speaking, even though the Nuggets were this upper echelon team, a lot of people in the NBA didn't really see them even beating the Lakers, for example, or beating the Warriors, for example, right? They didn't really have high hopes for it. When the Western Conference Finals started, the Denver Nuggets were looked at as the underdog in terms of that series because of the star power of the Lakers and Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and that duo has proven to do it. We don't know what the Nuggets can do, but they ended up showing people why they're this serious of a team. So both these teams kind of have this underdog mentality in terms of what they bring from each conference. So that's why I feel like it's a little bit underwhelming when you talk about the aura, because they're really, if you're both underdogs, there's not really someone that's fighting for something in a sense, if you understand what I'm saying. So that's why I thought it was like the aura was a bit off. Like
I don't think Denver is an underdog team. You're the number one seed. Arguably, who could have been the MVP candidate on your team and the back-to-back MVP on your team. So you're really not an underdog. What I would say this is, everybody does love an underdog story. So the Heat, to me, if they were in the finals and it wasn't like Denver in the finals, hey, let's say like the Lakers were in the finals or the Warriors were in the finals, this would be a much bigger hype. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying? It's because it's Denver there that it's not a hype. Everybody was rooting for the underdogs to come out. Like, it was entertaining when Jimmy Butler and them were taking out the Bucks. But the reason why it's not entertaining for the Nuggets is because the Nuggets are not a proven team in terms of like championship level. They have not won a ring, and Jokic has never won a ring himself. So I think a lot of people, even though they're trying to root for this underdog cause, are also okay with rooting for Jokic winning a championship for the first time in his career. You get what I'm saying? However, if it was Steph trying to go for his fifth, or LeBron trying to go for his fifth, or I don't know, somebody else trying, KD going for his third, or some destroying that legacy, if Jimmy were doing that, that would be much bigger, like aura, kind of like what Kawhi did in 2019.
I agree to some degree, but I think that let's go with like the hypothetical that Miami ended up winning it all, right? The talks that Jokic would be in and the slander he would probably get would probably be really, really high because of the fact that he's going against a team that's just inferior to them, that they're just a much better team. You've seen it in game three, how they were able to execute and what they were doing offensively and even defensively to a degree, not even allowing points in the paint to be a high for the Miami Heat. So if he were to lose this series while also putting up what he's putting up, I know for a fact there's going to be people who will push an agenda as to why Jokic can't lead you a title, why Jokic's defense is the problem, which probably wouldn't be the case if the series played out in a Miami favorite to win. That's my issue right there. I feel like Miami's so inferior to Denver, even though they already stole one on the road, is that when Denver looks like that championship team, it just looks like they're destroying like kids at the park, and you're grown, and it's like a grown man at the park playing basketball. There's a kid, and the grown man is just going crazy. He's dropping 30 in the park. That's what it feels like sometimes, right? It's just a lot underwhelming for me. And I just think that Boston in its entirety would have been a lot more competitive. I still would have picked Denver in like six games, but at the same time, I think Boston would have been a much better matchup. And then that storyline kind of aspect of it would have been great, because two top seeded teams, two great teams, two great offenses. I think the 1 and 2 offenses in the league both have solid defenses. They've both been proven in terms of deep postseason runs, and they both have players who are trying to get there first. So I think that would have definitely been better in terms of storyline and everything.
Yeah. Honestly, on paper, yes. Yes, you're right. However, I don't think Boston would have put up a better fight. I think if Boston came out, the Denver Nuggets would have swept them. Completely have swept them, because they already took care of a team with two better stars. However, they've seen the Boston that they're lacking coaching. I think the only edge Miami even has right now is coaching. And because of that, they're able to manipulate and adjust here and there and get away with it. And to me, they're playing with almost like nothing to lose, with so much heart that it just gives them a better chance to win. And they've been carried that since the first series. You know, they were up at one point 3-1 and nobody still believed they were going to beat the Bucks. That's how crazy it was. Like, they looked like, yeah, whatever. Like, the betting odds didn't even shift a little bit. And that's just how much heart the Heat have. Same with even round two, they didn't expect them to beat the Knicks. Round three, they definitely didn't expect them to beat the Boston Celtics, let alone be up 3-0. And even then, they still didn't give them the credit they deserve. To me, Boston coaching staff was just in a rut. I mean, I don't know. I don't think he deserved the job. I think he was just up there running a random offense. I mean, you got your co-stars giving you 9 turnovers in closeout games. It's something. It's a recipe for disaster. Denver would have probably eaten them up. Boston would have been a terrible matchup for Denver. Denver would literally have taken advantage everywhere. They would have nothing to do.
I think defensively they pose a much bigger issue for the Nuggets instead of Miami, because of the fact that Miami just lacks size, and Bam, as great of a defender he is, and we talked about this off the record as well, he just doesn't have like that help in terms of another interior big to kind of help him with shot denial and what's going on in the paint, because we see the Nuggets are dominating them in the paint. I think in game 3, there was like a 30-point difference in points in the paint. They weren't shooting the 3-ball well at all, but they were getting everything they wanted inside. And I just think that with Robert Williams being there, along with the fact that you have much bigger and more versatile wings than Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown is, as much as he is an overrated player, I think he's a capable on-ball defender at times. Marcus Smart, who's shown to be a DPOY, Malcolm Brogdon, Derek White, these are all viable players who are switchable. They pre-switch well. When they're actually locked in, they look like a much better team and a championship caliber team. But the problem is that I agree with you with is that the fact that they are unserious sometimes, where the half stretches of basketball where they just look like a team that's like below 500 sometimes, make low IQ plays, things of that nature. So I can understand to a degree, but I still think in a final setting, they'll probably be much more serious and it would be more competitive. And offensively too, they'd be able to actually keep up with them in terms of perimeter shooting. And as much as I do think that Jason Tatum is a bit overrated, I think he would actually step up in that series along with the guys like Malcolm Brogdon, Derek White, yeah, Marcus Smart, things of that nature. So but I think especially Al Horford too, as opposed to Fenner, I forgot about him, but yeah, I think those guys would actually help.
Boston do make deep problem to me. Boston is that their unseriousness, people just take it as a joke. No, they're unserious to a very bad, they're unserious non-proven team. Like Golden State is another team that plays very unserious at times, but they are a proven team. So there's two different things, you know. If you already know you've gone to that level, you've won at that level, you being unserious is not, people can laugh that off. With Boston, we can't keep laughing it off because it hurts them in the long run, because they keep getting into deeper series when they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to take Atlanta 6 games. You're supposed to end them in 4. You're not supposed to be extending these series because you caused the risk of injury, which happened in that Miami game 7. Hypothetically, let's say Boston did pull off and win game 7. Jason Tatum was compromised. His ankles were gone. There was no way in hell in that final series he was going to be productive. Kind of like last year, because he went to game 7 with Miami again. He came with a busted shoulder. So now you're like, you're compromised in the NBA fund. And you see what happens to Jason Tatum when he's compromised. He's one of those players that cannot play with any injury and like lock it up. Not many players can, but he's one of those players that just looks half of himself, even less than that 30% of himself when he's compromised. And it was very evident in that game 7. As soon as he got compromised, he could literally do nothing, which meant Jaylen Brown had to do too much. And they couldn't get the ball into Jason Tatum's hand because he just really couldn't move. If Jason Tatum was going into the NBA Finals like that from a team like Denver who got a 10-day rest, it would have been like, I don't think he would have made it past game 3. And that's just my thing. These deep playoff runs take a toll on their bodies because they keep going into deep playoff runs before they get to the NBA Finals. Denver has been resting. They've been resting for 10 days and they were ready for it. They're going to get out the gates and win that series to me. And that's why I thought, you know, Miami might be the better matchup because Miami still is full of that energy. Even after being hurt, they're able to adjust next man up kind of mentality.
Yeah, I agree. I think that with Denver resting was definitely a huge factor as to why they look so good. But sometimes like resting that long, like they're not all cases for every team, can hurt you sometimes. Like it's better to have like 2-3 days of rest and a bit of recovery. Some film, no practice, and you're just traveling rather than having a weeks of rest, because there's probably going to be practices, running plays and everything like that. So I think some of the guys would probably be just on court ready better than the Nuggets. And that's shown to be the case sometimes, even in this series in the game 2 where Denver just looked flat and Miami took control of that, right? But I still think that Boston would be a much better matchup for them, for like just on paper too and on the floor. As unserious as that team is, they've almost actually came back from a 3-0 deficit, which is pretty crazy. And hadn't Jason Tatum gotten hurt, I actually think they probably would have took that series. And you can people also always, say that you can also see always, the same for them being on series too. The fact that they went down 3-0 is also a problem, which
let me
pause,
let me bring you back on that almost came back from 3-0 series. I think everybody conveniently forgets what happened in game six. That lucky right place right at time shot by White. Technically, they should have ended this in six. I mean, they just got an I don't even know how he got it off in time. You know, after Marcus Smart shot that three, the miss, it should have ended there. Should have been ended there, but it didn't. And now we got to game seven, which I believe Miami pretty much had control that whole game.
I think that Boston actually did a pretty good job during that game, actually maintaining the lead. It was the fourth quarter where they had a lead and Duncan Robinson went off. Jimmy Butler was getting buckets and they crawled back into the game and they got fouled on that three. Jimmy knocks down all those free throws and then they get a quality look at Marcus Smart, which if you're Miami, you live with. So if you're the guy.
No, I'm not talking about game six. And I'm talking about game seven.
Oh, you're talking about game seven?
Yeah, I said they were pretty. Miami was in control majority of game seven. In game six, what I was talking about is that quality shot Marcus Smart did take. I don't like when you have 3 seconds and you take a 3-point shot and you dribble into it. The fact that you were able to get two shots off is wild. Like, absolutely wild.
That's because Max Strus wasn't there for the crash. He was getting caught up on the screen. So then Derek White.
Not even that. I think Eric did make a mistake. Sometimes great coaches do make mistakes. Yet the rule of thumb is you got to let them only get one shot off. It's very simple. Even if White didn't get that rebound, I think the second closest to it was Jason Tatum. There's
Bam had two people boxed out during that.
You didn't box out. Derek White is actually an incredibly irresponsible move.
Bam had two of them boxed out, but the guy, Max Strus, is Derek White's matchup, and he got caught on screens during the draw play for Marcus Smart 3. So when the shot went up, Max Strus still fighting over these screens to get to Derek White, but Derek White's already in the right
place. That's what I'm saying. You don't go sometimes because he was supposed to go under, because even Marcus Smart got a wide open shot, in my opinion. To me, they didn't even contest that correctly. So I'm saying they made a mistake on defensive setup in general. Yes, you got the right guy to shoot the ball. That's where so to me, I think Eric Spoelstra was probably made it a plan to make sure that it wasn't Tatum or Brown taking that shot. Now that you got one and two out the way, once you get Marcus Smart to the hand and he shot that ball, you still got to contest it. But gladly he missed. But then once he missed, you allowed an offensive rebound put back. That can't happen. That can't happen. Like, these things were things you address in the huddle, you know, like it's like aside from all of that, just make sure like you get that thing. I don't even think in that situation, boxing out somebody is the way you do. Just out jump and toss them because because once you bat the ball down, you don't even need to physically rebound the ball. You just got to bat it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So Bam shouldn't have been boxing nobody out. He should have just been going for it and he should have got it. You know, there's nobody better than him under there. And just bounced, taking, swatted it backwards. Just like playing at this point volleyball, you know?
Yeah.
And speaking of playing games, what do you think about this off-season shenanigans that are going on? There's a lot going on, so let me just give you a little refresher. We've got the Ja Morant situation, which the NBA, I mean, Adam Silver, to me, didn't even have to make that announcement because he just ended up causing a lot of stories. I mean, he could have just waited. You know what I mean? To talk about Joth after the finals, but he made that cryptic message like, hey, I don't want to take the attention away from the finals because of that's how bad it is. But by saying that comment, he took attention away from the finals. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
So, like, I don't know what he was trying to gain from that. There you have a Ja Morant, and then you've got the Zion mess with the porn star because he's a freak. And then you got
that's crazy.
Yeah, and then you got Steve Kerr's comments who basically put Golden State in like the back wall. Then a new report came out today. I don't know if you heard. Steph wants one more year with the core. So we're gonna start with Ja. What do you think about Ja Morant? And how can do you think he should get suspended half the season? How can anybody help him? What is the issue here? Like, what's going on? What could be his future?
As far as the Ja situation, I do think he's a great player, but the situation is a bit tough. The first defense was a little bit strange with the gun. A lot of people were saying it's a lighter or whatnot. I didn't really buy into that business, but a first defense is whatever. It was a mistake, he said, and he's supposed to move on from it. But the second time was pretty damning because of the fact that he was on Instagram Live and his friend seen him with. He was on Instagram Live and he seen his friend on Live and he ended up grabbing the gun and reaching down for it to show it. And his friend seen that and immediately panned the camera towards him. And on top of that, it was on his own Instagram live. It wasn't on Josh, it was on Josh's friend. And that said friend, I think he ended up unfollowing as well, which is pretty weird because his friend tried to protect him in terms of not showing the gun, but it ended up slipping out. And now he's at detriment for it, which is unfair. And I think Ja is due for a lengthy suspension. It's probably going to be between the ranges of 30 to like 45 games. Adam Silver said he uncovered more, but he doesn't want to bring light to it because of the NBA Finals. And like you said, that just brought more light to it because of the fact that you even mentioned it. And now Mike Malone is more angry that people aren't talking about the finals now, right? So I just think that this situation is going to be really, really bad come offseason, especially when the finals are done. Because if he's mentioning now, like, hey, like, we found more about like what you got going on, it's going to be a problem. And that's not good for someone who wants to be the future face of the league or can be.
Yeah. And I think I think it's just irresponsible. When I first saw it, I went to the route like, oh, you know, it might be Josh's friends and stuff like that. And to me, I said, it's really not Josh's friends. You know what I mean? It's on him. The first time he literally took it out in the club himself, recorded himself. The second time his friend was just vibing and he took the gun out. So him unfollowing his friend is irrelevant to the situation. I don't know if it's a publicity stunt. I don't know if it's like, oh, I'm moving on, look at me kind of stunt. To me, you just can't be stupid. Like, you already lost $40 million this year from the All-NBA. You're going to lose potential deals from like Nike and all these people. You just have to be smarter. Like, you're letting hundreds of million dollars go away. And to me, I also point the finger at his mother who thinks he can treat her son like a gangbanger. Oh, somebody yelled at me at the shoe store, come here and fight them. I mean, why are you putting your son in this situation? And then as a father, his father, we've complimented him so many times throughout the Josh's career, like, oh, he's always there, he's his number one fan. But you know what, now I'm looking back at it, like, where are you at? Like, are you really not here? Like, you're not understanding what your son is doing, how much he's losing. Like, get a grip. He needs real people around him. And Ja Morant has to just be smarter for himself, for his future. It's not even about being the future of the NBA, but he's letting generational wealth and everything go out his way. And to me, I think like sponsors and all these deals and all these people have given him a great grace period where they have not, to me, like, where they have not like taken away his stuff. Like, he, like Kyrie did very, like, to me, minimal things compared to Ja Morant, and he's been stripped of everything because they didn't like him. You know what I mean? And Ja Morant getting towards that area and that territory where he's about to lose almost everything, and he can't get there. He needs to be smarter. And to me, from that draft class, I can say the same thing about Zion and what's going on. To me, like, yo, is he a freak? Because the things this woman is saying, it, like, first of all, why are you dealing with porn stars? Okay. Have you not learned from Magic Johnson's situation? Come on. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about people that could literally carry every venereal disease possible, and you're messing with them, and then you're getting them pregnant, and then you're not focused on your rehab and you're trying to get back to the NBA career. You're up for a contract sooner than rather than later. Deals, all these things. Zion was supposed to be the next coming. His hype was second to LeBron James. I mean, now third to Victor. But it's crazy that he's actually dwindling down, which is self-sabotaging himself, which is crazy to think about. So what are your thoughts on the Zion situation, Freaknik situation?
It's a lot on his plate, which sounds crazy. But it's interesting because I do think a lot of athletes in the NBA do things like this in terms of like just messing around with other women, because these are high profile men, right? These are celebrities or athletes, and some women are just attracted to them, right? And the part where Zion messed up was just keeping everything in the tuck. Like, if you're going to do something of this, if you're going to do something like this, then you need to keep it a secret and keep it just on the down low, kind of. And his mistake was actually leaving the situation that open, I guess, posting the picture with his baby mother when the pregnancy, knowing that he was messing with two or possibly even more other women, because I think there was a third that came out today posting him in her bed with his shirt off, and you can see his back tattoo. So I just think that whole situation is really messy. Do I think there's going to be like a repercussion on his career? Probably not, because we've seen worse situations and NBA players are able to maintain. So I think him just keeping it on the down low is something that he's probably gonna have to do in the near future, and not use his public Snapchat to message other women and have his full entire government name or something like that. So I don't know.
Time he's been exposed. Remember when he used to mess with them snow bunnies earlier in his career?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but to me, like with Zion, like I know you said it might not affect his NBA career, but to me, I think it will, because women are talking about how instead of rehabbing, like they have sex with him quite a lot per day. You know what I'm saying? It's taking so much energy, time. It almost sounds like an addiction to me versus just something he does leisure on his spare time. Mm-hmm. And he's flying them out, paying for everything. He's spending a lot on these situations. On top of that, like they talk about stuff like, oh, he's got so much junk food and all this stuff around the house. To me, when I hear that, I see red flags all over my head. You know what I mean? If you're the New Orleans Pelicans, you got to be worried. You got to sit down with this guy, but like, hey, we can't get your weight under control. We can't get you healthy. We're not spending $200 million on you, and this is what you're doing in the offseason. You know, a part of paying you is that we are trusting that you're putting in the dedication. And to me, he's made it clear that he's not.
So, and I agree to some degree. I think him messing around with other women is messing up with his career to some degree. But the reason why I think it might not mess up his career, because this might be just a wake-up call, because of the fact that like all of these women who are coming out and saying da da da, oh, you mess with me, oh, you mess with me, and things of that nature, I think that would just be like a wake-up call for like, okay, I just really need to lock in now, because this is the only thing pretty much I have that can give me some peace and things of that nature for the time being. So I think going forward, he's probably gonna,
the first time it happened, I mean, to me it's not the first time, it's like the third time he's had enough calls. I think it's just a habit that he keeps doing. So to me, is and he also has sex tapes, and they have sex tapes of him. And that's not a good image to have. I mean, I don't even know why you would be in a situation to record things, even if you're going to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, but that's Zion for you. Well, that's the mess for the NBA offseason. It's just getting started. We're definitely probably going to, the season's not even fully over yet. We're still in the middle of finals, and we've talked about so many non-basketball related things, and that's just the NBA, like 0 days without unnecessary drama. And I know throughout the summer, we're about to get crazy free agencies, a lot of teams making tough decisions. A lot of things have to be shifted. Teams are going to be blowing up, the trade, the draft, a lot is going to be happening. So, Kate, we'll probably try to tune this in and run it back again for one of those conversations. So I really appreciate you coming on this platform, KB. I mean, if you want to shout out your socials and stuff, if you want people to follow you, you could do your exit. But thank you so much for coming. Anything you want to say on your way out?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciated this time on this pod. My socials are KB Knows Ball. So that's on all platforms, Twitter, on YouTube. That's two main platforms I'm mostly on. But yeah, y'all could check me on. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you, Nana. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for coming.